Welcome back to Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. I'm your host, Tim Friedman. Brand new episodes of our podcast start in just a couple of weeks. First, we'll keep you up to date with the concert calendar. And also, today in rock history, we'll go back in time for what's happening on this date, October 18th, in years gone by. And then we'll have highlights of Season 1. Next week, join us for a preview of an all-new season, Season 4, which kicks off November 1st. And keep in mind, Frank and I are excited about bringing you our one-year anniversary show on November the 29th. That's all coming up on Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations, featuring rock expert Frank Ost. All right, Frankie, we have highlights of Season 1 coming up, but we're going to keep you up to date with Today in Rock History and birthdays for October 18th. On this date in 1957, a young man named James Paul McCartney made his debut with a group called The Quarrymen, a show in Liverpool, England. I guess he couldn't travel far. He was only 15 at the time.
Yeah, he probably took his bicycle to, to the show.
10 years later, John Lennon's movie, How I Won the War, premiered in London. Remember the with him with the soldier
helmet.
Head on?
Yep. I remember that was on the first cover of Rolling Stone magazine. Very first cover was with John in this little helmet.
In 1968, Frankie, the New Yardbirds made their live performance debut at the Marquee Club. They would play two more dates before changing their name officially to Led Zeppelin. 1975, Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel reunited for their appearance on Saturday Night Live. Paul was the guest host that night. They sang two songs, Scarborough Fair and The Boxer. And then in 1997, World Series Game 1 was played in Florida between the Florida Marlins and the Cleveland Indians, and Hanson sang the national anthem at Game 1 down there in Miami. Shape of things to come. Birthday is Chuck Berry, born in the state in 1926, George C. Scott, 1927. A year later, let me tell you about Keith Jackson, born in 1928. Mike Ditka turns 82 today, and REO Speedwagon's guitarist Gary Richrath, he was good. 1949, passed away already 6 years ago. Concert calendar time. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremonies are taking place at the end of the month already on the 30th
of October.
The inductees will be Carole King, Tina Turner, Todd Rundgren, Foo Fighters, Go-Go's, Jay-Z. A lot of early influence awards go to Gil Scott-Heron, Charlie Patton, Kraftwerk, Musical Excellence category, LL Cool J, Randy Rhoads, and Billy Preston.
What amazes me is we've talked about so many of those. That's what the fun of doing this is, talking about these folks.
I don't have tickets. I'm not going to go Saturday night, but at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, bigger venue.
Oh, yeah.
You do have to show proof of vaccination or like a negative COVID test over the last 7 days or whatever to get in.
Sure.
But I wonder how long this show is going to go. It used to go for hours on end. So in November, the concerts really start getting going at the MGM Northfield Park Center stage. The Monkees will be there Wednesday the 3rd. Chicago the next night. Going to go.
Right.
Going to go see Chicago.
Wow. I'd love to, but I think I'm going to pass this time.
It's not a great venue. The seats aren't angled. They're not pitched real well. And there's a lot of them in there kind of close in together. They do have large screens on each side of the stage. But it's a tough venue. Plus, for me, living on the west side of Cleveland, you know, you get out of there. And
it's a long haul.
45 minutes in November. You never know about the weather.
And I've heard that the tickets are usually kind of pricey there. So, you know, rather than... I love it when Chicago comes to town and they have somebody else, like REO Speedwagon or the Doobie Brothers or something like that. The Earth, Wind, and Fire. Mm-hmm. Those are really fun concerts.
Bob Dylan's show, you know, the Rough and Rowdy Ways World Tour. Talk about a never-ending tour scheduled to last until 2024. So it's coming to the State Theater, KeyBank State Theater, downtown.
That's right.
Closer venue. It's going to start promptly at 8 p.m. on Friday, November the 5th.
Yes.
So gotta be in your seats.
That's right.
Todd Rundgren's coming to the MGM Center stage on Saturday and Sunday, November the 6th and 7th. And Carl Palmer's ELP Legacy celebrating their 50th anniversary.
That's right.
They'll be at Kent Stage for an 8 p.m. show on Friday, November the 12th. Maybe I'll see you down there.
That'll be an interesting show. I wonder what they're going to play. And who are the players?
Yeah.
Again.
Do you think he'll play drums? Will he still be
behind the set? I'm sure he'll be. There'd be only reason he'd be there would be to play drums. Cause I don't believe he played anything else, and he certainly didn't sing.
They're going to need a singer.
Yeah.
Genesis at the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse at the end of November already on the 30th. That's a Tuesday. It's their first North American tour in 14 years. It's a huge tour. They'll be playing in Motor City the night before. So we had some really good segments in season one, Spotlight Years from 67 all the way through 81 or 82 right there. One Hit Wonders like The Little Black Egg by the Nightcrawlers, 98.6 by Keith. Those were from episode 4. Episode 6 had Run, Run, Run by JoJo Gunn. You'd think they would have done more with Jay Ferguson there. And Hot Rod Lincoln, Commander Cody and His Lost Planet Airmen, also from episode 6. Those were the two One Hit Wonders we had back then. And not so great songs as well. From pop music to Kung Fu Fighting and You're Having My Baby, all number ones in the mid to late 70s. Then we got a tribute to Michael Stanley. He passed away in early March. And Frankie and I both had some really nice things to say about Michael and how we've both seen Michael Stanley over the years. Not with his resonators. I wish I had done that, seeing him as a solo artist, but saw him many, many times, as did Frankie, at Blossom or the Coliseum or other venues when they were the Michael Stanley Band, certainly in the 70s and into about the early to mid 80s. So let's listen back to highlights of season one. So this was a story that I'd like to tell you about me as a young broadcaster at ACRN, the All Campus Radio Network. Back in the spring of 81, we were celebrating our 10-year anniversary. Now it's 50 years, but back then, my friend Steve Mackle and I were both doing the sales thing for the radio station. It was a commercial radio station. So we really wanted Michael Stanley to call in and give us a happy 10-year anniversary congratulatory message. And you know what? One day he actually did. And he knows that there are so many Northeast Ohioans down at Ohio University, including Mackle, who loved Michael Stanley and the band. And so one day, he called. And this is what happened. So Mackle and I chit-chatted with Michael for a couple of minutes, and then we asked him if he would give us that actuality. And he said, you know, the standard, happy 10th anniversary to ACRN, the All Campus Radio Network, Ohio University, Athens, Ohio. We love you guys down there. Keep rocking, type of thing. And for Mackle and I, as one of the highlights of our young broadcasting career, we quickly got it on to another source like a cart or a reel-to-reel or something so we wouldn't erase it or record over it by mistake. And, you know, I never got a chance to meet Michael in person, maybe at one of those kielbasa eating contests or something that you do in the celebrity circles when I was at 104 and he was just starting out in 98.5. So maybe something like that. But I always admired his work on the air at, in the afternoon drive, and he'll certainly be missed there. And, of course, on stage with all the music that he did and all the music that he left us. Let's continue on now with highlights of Season 1 of Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. If you're with us in the last couple episodes, since we're located in Cleveland, the Rock Hall is located right downtown. The museum opened in 1995. And we started off our conversation in episode 1 with the 2020 inductees, last time around 2019, and now we're up to, or back to, as the case may be, 2018. Bon Jovi, The Cars, Dire Straits, and The Moody Blues. First up, Bon Jovi. Frankie, your thoughts.
Ah, they're a fine group. I never saw them in concert and wish that I had somewhere along the line, but they're deserving. I never thought that much of their music that I would go out and pay money for it, but, you know, they're a rock group and they do a good job. And certainly they carried MTV in the early days of MTV, so...
So Stevie Nicks started out the program and is still now the only female to be inducted twice as a solo artist and, of course, with her work with Fleetwood Mac.
I didn't think of that, but you're right.
Yeah, what do you think about Stevie?
Oh, she's a wonderful performer and excellent songwriter.
She really is.
And the voice is so distinctive that the minute the record drops, you know exactly who it is.
It was distinctive then and distinctive now.
Still
maybe
is.
One or two octaves lower, but The Cars, hailing from Boston, one of many groups from Boston area, Jay Giles, Aerosmith, Boston. The Cars were formed in the late 70s. Clevelander Benjamin Orr got together with Rick Ocasek right here in Cleveland, actually, and we're bopping around the local music scene and decided to do some stuff together. Benjamin, of course, passed away in 2000. Great album that was followed up by The Candy O, also yes. Produced by Roy Thomas Baker, who would stick around for the next couple of albums as they moved into the 80s. That was a really good album, and it's really difficult when you're working on some material and getting your live chops together to duplicate that success in the second one unless you have that much material. Some groups find it hard to duplicate because they're touring and the record company has high expectations, as do the fans, don't they?
Exactly. We've seen a lot of disasters as second albums or that sound exactly like the first album. And that was one thing that they didn't do. In fact, it sounded very different in a lot of ways. Yeah, one of the most interesting things about Roxy Music is that a gentleman by the name of Brian Eno, who some of you rock fans would know for his production more than anything else, but he was on the first, at least first album, maybe the first two albums, and then decided that the whole thing was too commercial for him, and he was off to do something else. But he later probably had his biggest success with David Byrne of the Talking Heads.
Pretenders came out with their self-titled album that year. You know, they lost a couple of band members along the way afterwards, and due to cocaine or just drug use, or they're just so young. It's just so sad to see what happened to the Pretenders. But then Chrissie Hynde did okay as a solo
artist.
She did.
She retooled absolutely
the group and everything. And he wound up being a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. The Beatles versus the Stones. Who would you pick?
If you had to pick one group for the long run, for what they did in their over their whole catalog, I would, of course, pick the Beatles if I had to sit down and just listen to a catalog. However, if I were interested in going to see a show or going to see a concert, I would much prefer to see the Rolling Stones, because they did it for they've been doing it for 50 years, whereas the Beatles quit touring, what, in 66? So they had two or three years of touring and really weren't that good at the time. You know, that's a live act.
You could tell they were getting bored with it. The girls were screaming. They weren't listening to the music.
And exactly.
They just wanted to do some studio stuff. So, you may or may not believe this about Jim Croce, Freddie Mercury would cite him as one of his influences.
Now, where would that come from? I don't see it, but perhaps just in the songwriting end of things, I don't know.
Another Ahmet Erdogan Award winner that year, David Geffen. Now, if I could have any career other than mine, it would be his. Because head of Asylum Records, producer, film executive, he owned his own record label, co-founder of DreamWorks with Steven Spielberg and Jeffrey Katzenberg.
That's right.
He did it all. He won the Erdogan Award that year, too, and he turned his attention to films in the 80s called little things like Risky Business and Beetlejuice, and also was responsible as head of Asylum Records for signing Jackson Brown, the Eagles, Joni Mitchell, many other of those Southern California folk rock artists. So he had a stellar career.
Terrific stuff.
Geffen label, of course, featured the likes of Elton John in the 80s. New Wave, All the Rage, The Clash, The Pretenders, Echo and the Bunnymans, Simple Minds, Psychedelic Furs, Bow Wow Wow, Split Ends with an ENZ spelling, Adam and the Ants, spelled the regular way. Great names of bands, though. Split Ends.
Absolutely.
Split Ends, I Got You, that featured Neil Finn, who went on to do some other stuff with Crowded House, now is playing with Fleetwood Mac.
Fleetwood Mac, yeah.
So New Wave was all the rage in 1980. Disco was really then put back into what they now call dance music, back in that category, which was cool. It wasn't just New Wave bands that that signaled the end of disco. We spoke about that in earlier episodes, how groups like Billy Joel, Boston, Toto, Bruce Springsteen, they were still hitting it big, and they were able to kind of keep disco at bay. But then new wave groups were coming out, but it wasn't just the English bands, was it? We had plenty of American bands that were doing their thing in the rock and roll circuit.
Absolutely.
Bob Seger is one of them, and Tom Petty. Queen, Another One Bites the Dust, written by bassist John Deacon. He didn't do much, and after Freddie Mercury's death, he took it so hard, he kind of dropped out of the music industry, and now I guess
he's just collecting
his royalties for writing that song and You're My Best Friend.
Okay.
And co-writing Under Pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you can just sit around and look in the mailbox. And
absolutely.
Spyro Staircase, spelled Starecase. Lead vocalist Pat Upton, the songwriter and vocalist, was a session musician later on with Ricky Nelson. More Today Than Yesterday.
That's right.
Good pop tune.
Great tune.
Get Together by the Youngbloods, Jesse Colin Young.
Boy, you couldn't go anywhere that year without hearing Get Together.
That was released originally 2 years earlier. It only charted at number 62, then re-released in 1969 and hit number 5. They did a bunch of club dates. They released 5 studio albums as a group and several live things, not to mention a dozen or so singles, but none of them charted until Get Together.
Get Together.
Yeah. Love Can Make You Happy by Mercy. Now, I like that better than Gene. In fact, I like it a lot better than Gene. I think you might have heard it at wedding receptions and kind of like We've Only Just Begun or something a couple of years later. Number one in the summer, it was a hit of those wedding receptions, and the pop group from Florida did hit number two, followed up by a song which only went to number 79. Remember the song Forever?
No.
I imagine
I missed that one.
Probably sounds a little bit like the one before.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember Crazy Elephant, Gimme Gimme Good Lovin'?
I do remember Crazy. What a great name.
They released that twice in 1969. 1969 was a good year. And for one-hit wonders, that's just some of them, too.
Yeah.
Frankie, I'm sure you're with me on this. I love rock and roll instrumentals from the 70s. And Hocus Pocus by Focus is one of my favorites from 1973. But you got to have the album cut, don't you? Didn't you have the single to it, Frankie? How was that?
I went out and bought the single. It was about 3 minutes long. It kind of stunk. Because it didn't have all the neat stuff on it.
Kind of like the K-Tel compilations of the 70s.
Exactly. Just nothing there. No there.
So I was telling you in the previous episode that I bought singles and have money for albums, and I listened to Wixie. But the curious thing is I have the album and not the single.
Nobody owns that album.
I don't think I ever bought it. I think I stole it from my brother.
Great stuff.
So 75, coming off of the heels of 74. Had some not-so-good songs, but the albums were fantastic. And why don't we just start with the one that I think got it all started for Bruce Springsteen, Born to Run. He had a couple previous to that, but released in August of that year. What did you think of that album?
Terrific album. And, of course, that's the one where the week he released it, he was on the cover of Time Magazine and Newsweek. That was quite a feat. Those are the two biggest magazines out there. And to be on cover of a weekly news magazine was huge.
The single Born to Run was released in advance of the album. They're having trouble putting the tracks together. They enlisted the help of John Landau, who was one of the inductees of the Rock Hall in 2020. The anticipation was building amongst the fans because a lot of radio stations started playing Born to Run. People wanted to hear more. And finally got it with that album, didn't they?
Sure did. In fact, I went and bought it at Record Revolution on Coventry.
Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti debuted that year. What can you tell me about that?
Double album set, as I remember. Four sides of Zeppelin, which is something they hadn't done before and wouldn't do again. Just fantastic riffs.
1975 also brought a top album, Linda Ronstadt, Heart Like a Wheel. She'll be a featured artist in future episodes, and we've already brought her up a few times. Great voice, great album, Heart Like a Wheel. She had You're No Good, When Will I Be Loved. Great cover songs. Those songs were fantastic, and as was she. Elton John, Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy, the only album at the time to debut in the number one slots in the top 200.
That's right. I remember when that happened. It was unheard of.
To debut at number one at that time, not anymore, but back then was unheard of.
Yeah, that was definitely unheard of.
They only had one single released from that album in 1975, Someone Save My Life Tonight, which did peak at number four. Captain Fantastic still remains one of Elton John's favorite albums, he said, because it wasn't overly commercial. 1967, a great year for music, still a year away from 1968. What a tumultuous year that was. Top albums. We began the year with The Monkees at the top of the Billboard Top 200 chart, followed by More of the Monkees, which spent better than 4 months there. Headquarters, also a number one album. And then it wrapped up the year with Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, and Jones Limited. The only reason they called it Jones Limited was that Michael Nesmith and Davy Jones shared the same birthday, December 30th, in between something called Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Beatles came out with that in late May of 67, spent 4.5 months at number one, and music was never going to be the same.
No, until then, we'd kind of gotten used to having single records. That was the single, the 45, was kind of the way that people went to marketplace. That's how our pop stars talk to us. Suddenly with Sgt. Pepper's, that certainly changed, and changed quickly because everybody else got a whiff of that, and very soon, everybody was putting out concept albums and everything else.
After 1966, the Beatles didn't take a break, but they were busy working on this album. Sgt. Pepper's, what a phenomenal album that was. My favorite cut from side one, anyway, is called She's Leaving Home. And when George Martin heard that beautiful song, he said he wept openly. Played without guitars or drums, but with a harp. Every cut on that album is fantastic.
Yeah, there's nothing weak about it at all. It's one of the great classic albums. For many years, it stood atop the Rolling Stone top 500 albums of all time. It has just been moved off that place by what's going on by
Marvin Gaye.
But I think it's still, if it's not number one, it's certainly top five of all time. No question about that.
4.5 months had to be long enough at the top of the charts, right? Because something came along that knocked it right out. It was Bobby Gentry and the album Ode to Billy Joe. Uneasy Rider, remember that one by Charlie Daniels Band?
Terrific song.
Charlie Daniels passed away earlier in 2020.
Yeah, Charlie, yeah.
Can't talk about 73 without the songs that shaped the year. And we might as well start off with The Carpenters. Karen and Richard. Richard liked the moniker given to them early on, Goody Four Shoes. Little Willie, The Sweet, back before they totally revamped their style. And they took a big chance, too, you know, when Fox on the Run and Ballroom Blitz.
Right.
But
right.
After Little Willie, they said, forget it, we're scrapping this whole bubblegum top 40 thing. We're going to be a hard rock band. And their record label flipped.
Well, I tell you, they're one of the most underrated bands around, as far as I'm concerned. Either way, the bubblegum stuff or the harder rock that they went to later on. And then there was even a little bit of disco there for a second. So, yeah, they're one of the underrated bands.
The Canadian band Edward Bear, who I always thought was a solo artist, but isn't, Last Song.
I'll Ever Write for Remember You. That? And he is not a solo artist, I take it.
No.
He is a band.
Comedian band. Cher, Half Breed. Now, Cher is an interesting story. She was in the middle of the Sonny and Cher show back then. And
that's right.
They actually pitched the song to her that Vicki Lawrence ended up doing and bringing number one, The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia. It was written by Vicki Lawrence's husband at the time, Bobby Russell. He would also pitch it to Liza Minnelli. King Harvest, Not King Crimson, Dancing in the Moonlight, started off the year. Pillow Talk, I love that song. It hit number three. It was originally pitched to Al Green, the Reverend Al Green, but he said, no, it's too racy for me. So Sylvia decided to take a crack at it and made it a top five hit. Also Sprock Zarathustra.
It was fun. A little Brazilian jazz. I bought the single, of course.
Of course.
Because it had trumpets on there, and if anything had trumpets on there, I was going to be buying it.
Peaked at number two in the nation, went on to win a Grammy. Then Deodato became a producer and arranger for The Cool and the Gang. Remember Celebration, Ladies' Night,
sure.
Too Hot, produced and arranged all those tunes. So for the band Santana, they had their most success in the late 60s, early 70s, and performed at Woodstock on day two. And you know who their lead singer was? Greg Raleigh, who went on to form Journey along with Neil Sean. They're going to be our featured artist of the day a little later on. Greg sang Black Magic Woman, Oye Como Va, Evil Ways, but he did not sing She's Not There. By then, he had moved on to Journey, and they were on to some other things. They did have a guy named Greg sing She's Not There. Name was Greg Walker, though. Our best year of rock this time around, our feature is 1971, best album. Well, there are tons of them. American Pie, Led Zeppelin 4, Allman Brothers Live at the Fillmore East, The Doors, L.A. Woman, Jethro Tull, Aqualung, Janis Joplin, Pearl. What do you think about 1971?
Well, you forgot my favorite record of all time. Who's Next by The Who.
By The Who.
What a genius.
Yeah.
I mean, not a weak moment on that one. And, you know, it's interesting that we bring up 1971 because just this week, Rolling Stone kind of re-released their top 500 of all time. And guess what's number one? Another 1971. What's Going On?
What's Going On?
By Marvin Gaye.
Talk about a cool singer.
Oh, my.
Talked about Peter Frampton, his solo efforts after Humble Pie. He worked with Ringo Starr and Billy Preston on his debut album called Wind of Change. And we will have Peter Frampton in our spotlight in just a couple of episodes when we feature 1976 with that Frampton Comes Alive album. I had no idea who he was at the time, but everybody in the audience sure did. And I thought, now who is this guy? Everybody knows all the songs he's playing.
Absolutely.
And I don't know any of them.
Yeah, because it took place at the Winterland in San Francisco, and he was basically known in two places. He was known in San Francisco and the Bay Area, and he was also known here in Cleveland. In fact, for a better time part of a year, he was part of the almost the house band for the Agora downtown.
Featured artists: Frankie, Chicago, Journey, Steely Dan, The Eagles, The Doors, The Who, Linda Ronstadt, Fleetwood Mac, The Stones, Jackson Browne, Elton John, Bob Seger, Woodstock. Frankie the Boss, your thoughts?
I think he's the greatest, probably, entertainer of our generation. He's that good. He has great, if you look at it, they're great albums. Put that together with the great concerts that he puts on and just his, you know, kind of humanitarian efforts and things like that. You roll it all into one, and I don't know how you can come up with anybody better, at least that I've seen in my generation.
A fan favorite of Cleveland, WMMS, the local rock station here, really helped promote him and put him on the map, didn't they? He's won 20 Grammy Awards, 2 Golden Globes, an Academy Award, and a Tony Award. That is hard to do. He saw the Beatles perform on, guess what? The Ed Sullivan Show. Now, just imagine if he and all
like
these other artists,
else.
If he and these other artists had gone to bed earlier or watching Disney or something and didn't see Ed Sullivan, nobody would have a record career.
Exactly.
So after the Long Run and the creatively titled Eagles Live album, they took a nice long break and decided to do some solo work. Randy Meisner had been putting out 3 or 4 solo albums. Glenn Frey, of course, had some big hits in the 80s, as did Don Henley. Boys of Summer and...
Oh, well, Building the Perfect Beast may be one of the perfect records of all time. Boy, what a tremendous record that is. And it's not too far away from, followed up by The End of the Innocence, which is another terrific album. So he only put out 3 albums in the decade, but boy, were they 3 albums.
Glenn Frey worked a lot with the Miami Vice theme and the MTV and the You Belong to the City. Miami Vice, that song was written just
right
for that show.
Exactly. The Heat Is On.
Heat Is On is from Beverly Hills
Cop.
Yeah,
that opens it up, I believe.
Yep. And so by then it was the mid to late 80s, and they didn't think the Eagles would ever get back together again, but they did.
Well, what did, I think Mr. Henley used the phrase that came up later, we'll be back together when hell freezes over.
Now that's a more creative title for a live album, isn't it? The album was released in 1994 and featured a mix of studio tracks and some live music. You know, Jim Morrison was a big fan of Friedrich Nietzsche, as well as Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac.
That's right.
He loved poetry and the desert. Manzarek and Densmore, familiar with each other from Surprise, meditation classes. And their debut album, The Doors, now 4-time platinum, was recorded in less than a month, unlike albums like Pyromania by Def Leppard, which took almost a year. Also in 1967, they performed Light My Fire on the Ed Sullivan Show. You know, just a few years away from the Beatles performing there, and Ed was not happy.
Well, from the way I hear it, they were not supposed to say higher.
Nope.
Is that the way it went down?
Yeah, and they said it anyway. They said, that's all Jim knows, is to sing it the way they wrote it.
And they were set up to do, I think, 5 or 6 more shows, and they were immediately canceled by Mr. Sullivan.
All canceled.
And of course, Jim Morrison, being Jim Morrison, said the only thing that he could say, what do you mean? We already did the Ed Sullivan Show.
Been there, done that, moved on. Frankie, our featured artist this time around, The Who. Inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1990, they've sold more than 100 million albums worldwide.
Wow.
They released Tommy in May of 1969, the rock opera mostly written by Pete Townsend. No surprise there, he's written most of their tunes. He's a great songwriter.
Oh, he's tremendous. And yeah, I think that's the reason that he and Roger Daltrey are still together to this day, because they've got 2 different ends of the thing. Roger has the voice, one of the greatest voices of all time in rock and roll, can't deny that. But then Pete Townsend can write it. So put it together and had a great group. if you take those each of those apart, it's not quite as good as the whole.
Asia included the likes of Michael McDonald, Carole King, and backing vocals, and smooth jazz artists like Tom Scott, Larry Carlton, Lee Ritenour, Joe Sample, among many others. So
absolutely.
You can see where that album was going. Asia featuring Deacon Blues, Home at Last, Peg, and of course, Black Cow. After the breakup of Steely Dan, he moved his family to Maui and stopped smoking and drinking. Rolling Stones will be our featured artist in episode 10. That's up next. And ever see the Stones in concert, Frankie?
I'd seen them twice, but at the stadium. And
difficult venue.
Very difficult venue, especially in the 70s where technology was not there yet to play in big barns like that. They just didn't have it. And so to hear a band like the Stones and see them in a place that's got 70,000 of your closest friends there just didn't work. And I really thought that the Stones were an overrated band because I'd seen them twice and both times I'd been there. Then I saw them at the Coliseum for the, they were on the Tattoo U tour. Fantastic. Much better sound system. Everything about it was good. Their last six songs were Honky Tonk Woman, Miss You, Jumping Jack Flash, Brown Sugar, Can't Always Get What You Want, and Satisfaction. So can you imagine those? You're listening to a concert for 2 hours, and then they kick that into gear.
What'd you think of Bob Seger's early stuff?
Well, I actually liked it because it's basically what made up the first live album, Live Bullet album, which at the time, back in about 1975, I think it was the first time we'd heard from him on a major scale outside of Detroit, let's put it that way.
Yeah, that album was recorded live at Cobo Hall there.
Right, and it's one album where I would say one of the greatest live albums I've ever heard. And you can tell that there are times in that album where he's singing for his life. He means every word of it. He, especially on songs like Turn the Page, you can feel it. You can hear a man who's desperate to make it.
Jackson Browne in one of my favorites, Hall of Fame Inductee 2004, introduced by Bruce Springsteen. Jackson Browne, what'd you think, Frankie?
Oh, tremendous, tremendous talent and just had great records over the years.
Songwriters Hall of Fame 3 years later. Other awards: the John Steinbeck Award for Environmental and Social Issues, Harry Chapin's Humanitarian Award to Fight World Hunger, the Gandhi Peace Award for Promoting World Peace, the Activist Against Environmental Issues, especially Nuclear Arms, Nuclear Energy, World Hunger. The list goes on and on. He's still doing that to this day. You got to give him credit.
Next up, The Pretender. Frankie, it featured another virtual who's who in the music industry, like Jeff Beccaro, Lowell George, Don Henley, Bonnie Raitt, Graham Nash, David Crosby, J.D. Souther, and a guitarist named John Hall, not of Hall & Oates fame. But remember the group, the 70s group Orleans?
Of course.
Yeah, Dance With Me and Still the One, a lot of other tunes. He also did session work with Seals and Crofts and Janis Joplin. Talk about running the gamut.
Captain Fantastic, really, they only released Someone Saved My Life Tonight, but Meal Ticket was on there. What'd you think of the album? I thought it was going to do better once it debuted so high. It had such high promise.
I think the problem was there was just too much Elton at that time, because even though we've mentioned all the albums, there were also singles that were being released during that time period. And he was working with our other artists, so he was on other people's records. You couldn't listen to two or three songs on Top 40 radio and not hear Elton John. Even his minor albums are still better than most.
I agree. And you can pick out something in your record collection and put a smile on your face, can't you? And
oh, absolutely.
My kids who love Lion King and love that song, Can You Feel the Love? And Elton John is kind at heart. He's a good-hearted man. You know, everybody knows him from his work with the AIDS Foundation and
right.
Tremendous work he's done there. Day one, Friday, Richie Havens, Before the Rain. But it looked like Richie Havens, by the time he was done, it rained on him. He was soaked in sweat.
Yep.
Nobody else was there to perform due to...
They wouldn't let him go off stage.
No. There's nobody there. They were all stuck in traffic. He played an 11-song set, including the improvised Motherless Child, which became the song Freedom.
That's right.
He's fantastic. And he's just running out of tunes.
But yeah, he made that up on the spot, and it made the movie.
Did.
Of all things.
Arlo Guthrie performed between Melanie and Joan Baez, and Joan wrapped up day one, performing that 14-song set, starting right around 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. We Shall Overcome, Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, started raining heavily by the time she was finished. But she was just a perfect performer
for that event. Yes, it was made for her.
Did you know anybody, they had to be older by then, you know, in 18, 19, or 20, or older, that went, or
I've never met a single soul who has admitted going.
I've never either. And I haven't.
Which is odd, because I have been so much a part of rock and roll, has been so much a part of my life.
Yeah.
It's odd that I never ran into anybody, but no, nobody.
It's not like I'm asking every single person who's older, hey, we're
no, Woodstock. No. But
now, CCR was the first group to sign for, I guess, $10,000, but they were upset that they had to go on stage after 12:30 in the morning. This is now going into Sunday, because of the extra long set by the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, who knew?
So being
the Grateful Dead might go on. They played like a 40-minute version of Let Your Love Light or something like that.
So I thought that Jimi Hendrix only had Star Spangled Banner or one or two others. I
didn't know Purple Haze,
I didn't know it was that long.
He's fantastic. It's a shame that more people weren't there for his set. But by that time, they'd had enough. They were tired. They'd been through it all with the weekend, and it was time for them to go.
Do you think some artists looked at it and maybe saw the documentary and said, you know what, I really wish I was a part of this after all?
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure there were a lot that did.
Season 4 starts in just a couple of weeks with all new episodes of Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. We'll start getting into some solo artists like Paul McCartney and John Lennon, George and Ringo, Eric Clapton away from the group Cream and Yardbirds. And then we're going to also have some new categories as well in our featured artist segment, like bands we wanted to hear more from. We'll talk about groups like Badfinger and BTO and many others as we move ahead. Southern Rock Folk Rock Part 2 will bring Poco your way. And also we're going to talk about that famous Altamont Speedway Gimme Shelter concert from 1969. Frank will have a lot of interesting facts about that. New categories coming your way, psychedelic versus pop. That one's going to be a lot of fun, you'll see. Also, One Hit Wonders will bring back Two Hit Wonders and artists who debuted at number one or number two. Plus, many other great surprises coming your way, starting November 1st. And don't forget, on the 29th of November, our big one-year anniversary of Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations, featuring rock expert Frank Ost. Next week is a preview of Season 4, and all new episodes coming your way Monday, November 1st, right here. We'll see you then.